Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. Professor Pat Ritchie is here today with us from the Department of Speech and Theater. He's going to be talking with us about bringing the debate program back to MTSU, something that is associated with extracurricular activities at most colleges and universities, and something that I had a great interest in when I was in high school because I was a member of the Forensic League, but unfortunately we didn't have enough people to participate in debate, original oratory, extemporaneous speaking, and even solo and duet acting, but not enough people for a real debate team. So we'll be right back to talk with Pat Ritchie after these words of wisdom.
The MTSU Foundation awarded Dr. John Vile, Dean of University Honors, the prestigious Career Achievement Award for his commitment to students and national standing as a preeminent constitutional lawyer. MTSU President Sidney McPhee told university faculty at its annual fall meeting that the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching has recognized the university for its academic engagement, community outreach, and partnerships. Construction is creating some minor detours around campus while work is completed that will ultimately ease congestion and improve traffic flow. Proposals for public service grants are now being accepted for faculty projects through September, administered by the University College. Projects range from literacy programs to historical research. And the MTSU True Blue Pledge celebrates diversity, generosity, integrity, and civility, and is now woven into the fabric of the Blue Raider experience.
Professor Ritchie, welcome. I welcome the opportunity to talk with you about collegiate debate.
All right, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your background, first of all, and how you got interested in debate and how you made it part of your career.
I went to a high school where debate was very important, so much to the point to where it actually overshadowed football often. And so debate was kind of impressed upon the students as being a very popular thing and the thing to do. And so I actually was introduced to debate in middle school, because they already started training debaters that early. And so by high school, it was almost a natural thing. And I did 4 years of competitive debate in high school. And like a lot of high school debaters, I had been burned out at the end of it. After I graduated from high school, I wanted nothing to do with debate because of the amount of time and just energy put into it. So I went into the military, and I spent some time in the military. And when I came back from the military, I went to a community college to use my military school money, and the debate coach at the community college found out where I'd went to high school and immediately contacted me and begrudgingly tried to get me to go. And I finally told him after a while that, okay, I'll give it a shot. I'll go to one tournament and see how it is, but I really don't want to do this anymore because it was such a pain in high school. And I went to that one tournament and I was hooked, and that was it. And I've been debating or coaching ever since, and that was in 2000.
Now, we have lots of students who have participated here in our mock trial teams and our mock mediation teams and have won lots of awards and done very well. But formal collegiate debate with its specific rules is really a whole different kind of animal from what students maybe have seen on television, on argumentative television programs where people talk over each other, and it's called a debate, but it really isn't. Tell us a little bit about how collegiate debate differs from what a student might have seen on TV in a, say, a presidential debate or a gubernatorial debate, as it is loosely titled.
One of the key differences in most forms of collegiate debate is that the broad area of topics you deal with. There is one form of debate called CETA where you only have one topic a year, but that's becoming limited. Now most people participate in NPDA, National Parliamentary Debate Association, or IPDA, International Public Debate Association. And those are formats of debate where every round you debate over a different topic. And they can be topics of local significance, state significance, national significance, and often international significance. So you're looking at a student who has to know multiple topics and really be current on the news to know what's going on. Whereas a lot of your other styles of format of debate, including like TV debate and mock debate. You have a set topic that you research in depth and you become an expert on. This is, approach is more of a renaissance approach of knowing multiple things about multiple aspects of multiple topics.
So the folks who you will be working with will be learning about all different kinds of formats of debating, not just the one where you say you put one person up against another and it's resolved, you take one side and you take the other side.
It's going to be similar to one takes one side and one takes the other, but those change and the topics change. So a student who may be well-versed in international politics may do well one round, but the next round may be based upon presidential politics. And so a student who is more versed in political kind of actions will do better in that round. So it doesn't allow only one kind of student to do well, but multiple people can debate on multiple topics.
Now, in mock trial, I know that the students have a case that is selected for them, and they argue that one and only case all year long, all academic year long. They practice for that case all academic year long in their various roles that they have been assigned. But what you're talking about with the extemporaneous nature of it and the shifting topics would require someone, or at least to have a well-rounded team where you would have specialists, one person who knows a lot about politics, another about education, another about religion, and so on. Is that correct?
That would be what a good team to have, where everyone knows a little bit and they can help each other. So if someone who isn't as strong in civic action gets a topic like that, they can ask a teammate, hey, give me a little bit of help on this, and vice versa. And it's really based heavily on what's current. So like right now, big topics would obviously be the economy and the budget. That would be a huge debate topic right now. It's gaining a lot of media attention. Both wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are current topics, and they even may bring into some local topics like education in the state of Tennessee and its stance. So it can shift back and forth, but it gives students the ability to look at that and to use expertise that are closer to their fields. So whereas in mock trial, it's very legally formatted. Debate attracts a whole venue of students. I've had political science majors, I've had geology majors, I've got communication majors, I've got science majors. It's really about argumentation and being able to just keep up on current events.
How do you intend to go about recruiting students for your debate team?
One plan is this program itself, just kind of getting information out to the campus, flyers, student newspapers. Awareness is usually the biggest issue. A lot of students have a background in debate or know about it, and so getting them the information that there is a team here at MTSU is important. And even for those who have never debated but are interested in it, because the debate team is open to all students. So you don't necessarily have to have a debate background to be a member to it. You just have to show up to practice and be willing to work and keep up on current affairs, and we work from there.
We'll be right back with more MTSU on the Record right after this.
The MTSU Educational Talent Search, or METS, reaches out to students in grades 6 through 12 in Coffee, Grundy, and Warren counties. We provide youngsters who have college potential with educational and financial aid counseling and guide them as they determine their educational and career goals. More than 95% of Educational Talent Search students graduate from high school, and more than 79% enroll in post-secondary education. This is METS Coordinator Debbie Frisbee.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
And we're back with Pat Ritchie on MTSU on the Record. What qualities do you look for in a good debater?
Honesty and hard work are the two that I need from a debater. You've got to have your heart and soul in it, and you've got to be willing to put the work into it. But there is no set formula for the great, perfect debater.
So you don't necessarily have to have James Earl Jones's resonant voice in order to make a great impression, or you don't necessarily have to have a great stage presence, you know, none of that.
Some of those can be taught and worked on. Others are situational. The James voice may work really well in one situation, but when we change topics, it may actually have a detrimental effect. And so a good debater is able to learn to maneuver between those and be able to change the way they debate. And so it's hard to say that this is the one winning formula. It's really a game of shifting and changing and be able to adapt to not only your judge, but your audience as well, which I think is a real key skill that people need in the real world.
So what you're really looking for is an intellectual chameleon.
In a way, yeah. People who are open-minded, who can critically think, mm-hmm. be able to look at both sides of a topic.
So if someone is given a topic to argue, say it's a hot-button issue like abortion, euthanasia, sexual harassment or discrimination, they are asked to argue a side with which they vehemently disagree, they're going to have to learn how to put their own feelings about the topic on hold if they are told to take a particular side and argue that side as rationally and as passionately as if they believed that particular point of view.
It can come to that, but rarely it does. A good debater can take a topic and find room to debate within what they believe, which is interesting, because there's a lot of grounds for debate on almost any issue there is. A good one that a lot of people have argued is kind of this idea of freedom of religion. And, well, at first that may sound very concrete in one way, but if you look at it from a distance and objectively, you can find room to argue about freedom of religion. Are we talking a state level? Are we talking national level? Are we talking individual preferences? Because each one of those takes the debate in a new area.
Well, that's a very broad topic. If that's the topic, they give you a lot of room to maneuver.
And often the topics are broad enough so that there is room for maneuverability.
I see.
Because okay. They do want good debate in the round. They want argumentation. And so they make the topics fairly vague so that the students have room to interpret them and maneuver as they need.
I've been in classes where debates were structured part of the syllabi. And in one particular debate in which I was obligated to participate for the sake of a grade, the premise was the founding fathers set the stage with the way they structured the Constitution for greater participation on the part of women and minorities. And there was an African-American young lady who said, well, that's hypocritical as all get out because the founding fathers had slaves. But the professor put her on the side of arguing that the founding fathers did right because he wanted people to argue, get used to, or learn how to argue points of view that they didn't necessarily agree with as a learning experience. Does it sometimes become a learning experience if you are asked to or forced to argue a side that you don't necessarily agree with?
I think it does. One of my old debate coaches and mentor once told me that no pancake is so flat that it only has one side. And so there's always two sides to that issue. And even if you're vehemently opposed to an issue, you have to understand your opposition in order to have a dialogue with them, in order to actually debate them and argue with them in a civilized manner. You've got to know where they're coming from and why they're coming from that stance. And so in that sense, you have to play devil's advocate. The abortion issue is a great issue. Why does each side so vehemently believe their position? In order to really debate and argue well, you've got to know why the other side is doing what they do.
How do you feel about students being told by their professors to debate within the body of a course, to make a debate a part of a college course, just having to do maybe one debate in addition to final exam and term papers and the usual types of things? And certain students just cannot endure it. Flop sweat, stuttering, shyness, wanting desperately to get something out of their mouth, but it just won't come. Did you ever in your entire life feel that way at a debate or even before you got into debate?
Yeah, I think it's a very common thing. One of the things I teach my students in public speaking, which I teach as well, is that if someone says they have no fear of public speaking, they probably should go to a hospital because there's probably something either physically or mentally wrong with them. Because every human being, to some degree, should have a fear of public speaking. It's kind of natural in us as human beings. And so part of the job of a professor or teacher is to teach people to overcome those fears or to manage those fears. And debate is the same thing. No one was born the greatest debater of all time. It takes years of practice and work. And so getting you through those first steps is very important. it's not uncommon for someone to be cold, to be sweaty, to feel sick when they first get up in front of a podium to speak to an audience. But the more they do it, the more comfortable they become with it, and it becomes natural.
Is there ever a situation in a competitive collegiate debate where less is more, where you have to know when to back off and not say something instead of being a ham and taking right. the entire stage and chewing up the scenery?
The key to that is a phrase called audience analysis. You've got to know your audience and what they're willing to take. If you've got an audience that is not there to listen to a long speech or may not be friendly to your topic, then less is going to be much better than more. Hit them with less information, but powerful information.
When you approach bringing a debate program back to life, are you talking about trying to go whole hog, or are you talking about baby steps from semester to semester?
I think it's going to be kind of in the middle. There is a foundation here, and so luckily I don't have to start from zero, but it's going to take a couple of years to get it back and completely back going on track. A lot of it has to do with just the fact that debaters need experience, and it's going to take a year to 2 years for some debaters to get to just the practical tournament experience they need to really start to do well as a squad. And that's the way I look at my teams, is I look at them as a squad. There are individuals who do better and who do worse, but overall, the squad is what's important, and it all balances out.
Do you have A teams and B teams, or is that, or is the connotation on that, would that be too demeaning?
I don't. Part of it's a funding issue, but even if I did, I wouldn't label them that way, because it becomes a competition within the team, and that can be negative, because then your debaters are debating each other rather than their opponents.
We'll take a quick break and be back with more MTSU on the Record.
Women in Science and Engineering, or WISE, helps college women prepare for and become involved in science-related careers. WISE nurtures women's interest in these fascinating and critical fields and provides mentoring and networking opportunities. The group's main goal is to assure women of their importance in all scientific and technical fields and to promote equal opportunity and treatment of women in science. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, WISE Advisor.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Here with Pat Ritchie on MTSU on the Record. So how would you structure a debate team? How many people do you need to have a good collegiate debate team? And how do you help determine their roles? Or is it more freeform than having them have assigned roles?
Ideally, 20 is a good starting number. That would give me 10 teams, because there's two people per team if we do Parley, or if we do IPDA debate, that's 10 individual debaters, and that's or 20 individual debaters, and that's a good number. And it really is based upon multiple factors. It's based upon participation, how often students show up to practice, how well they're putting time into practice. It also deals with student schedules, because students have a life outside of debate. And so I may not have debaters every weekend because they have other obligations. So that's a scheduling issue as part of it. And then sometimes it's talent as well. Some of the debaters who are doing better are going to be able to go to tournaments, while those who need a little more work may stay back, or they may be put in a different division called novice for young debaters who are learning, so they can debate people on the same level as them instead of going in and immediately debating the better debaters.
Is there a competitive process by which you determine who makes the team and who doesn't? Do you stage auditions for the debate team?
If the team got large enough, I would have to, but at this point, I don't see that happening. I think we could stay within the 20 to 30 cap quite easily.
And what sorts of teams, what sorts of colleges might MTSU's debate team be competing against?
At the local level, there are a lot of regional schools like Carson Newman, East Tennessee State has a team, Vanderbilt, I believe, has a team. So there's some local teams, but I want to get them out of the region and into the southern areas, Texas, Louisiana, Missouri, up into Kentucky as well, and eventually hit national tournaments, which are all over the country, and eventually, in the long run, world's tournaments. There's a tournament once a year held in one hemisphere, and then it switches the next year to the other hemisphere, and countries or colleges from all over the world attend it over the Christmas break, and it's a very big deal.
Now, in the age of budget cuts, people might be asking, what sort of resources do you have for all of this, for the funding of the debate team?
Right now we have a modest funding, but it's enough to get us on the road and get us going. That's kind of the ever-existent problem with debate, which is when it's time to cut line items, debate is always one of those that people eye that makes an easy cut. And so debate coaches, by nature, are very resourceful with the money they have. They have to be. And luckily, technology has been on our side because they've cut down the amount of copying that needs to be done, and technology has actually made it cheaper to debate. The flip side of it, though, is the cost of traveling has increased.
That, I would imagine that would be your major expense, would be traveling, because you, the currency that you're dealing in is words, and words are highly transportable.
Right.
Without having to spend too much money to do so.
Yep, gas and hotel rooms eat up the biggest part of the budget. And so it just has, I have to look at the size of the squad and adjust how many people are in rooms and where we stay and how far we can travel. And ultimately that may be a decision factor, is even though a tournament in Washington State is a very good tournament, we may not have the money to do so. Or if we do, because of the size of the squad, I can fly the team out rather than have to drive.
How much emphasis do debate judges place on the use of proper grammar? Is that a concern to them?
It can be. What they're looking at more is the structure of the debate and how good the argument is. But there are speaker awards for those who speak better.
How important is it from the standpoint of debate judges that debate participants use proper grammar?
Most of the time the emphasis is on argumentation and case structure and who actually wins the debate. And that's what most debaters are after, is the win or the loss. But there is also a component called speaking awards. And at the end of the tournament, usually the top 5 or 10 best speakers get an award as well. And so it does play a factor into it. And there are certain debaters who prefer the speaker award over the debate award. And so it can be an issue. And that's one thing we work on in practice, is dialect and diction.
Mm-hmm. I encountered, when I was in high school, a little bit of discrimination in my original oratory category because it was the age of Watergate, and I did a speech, an original speech, personally written, that was very congratulatory of Woodward Bernstein and the entire news media for breaking the story, and very critical of President Nixon. And I got downgraded very heavily by a very blatantly Republican lady who made it perfectly clear, to coin a phrase, that she didn't care for the president being spoken about in that manner, even though it was all perfectly within bounds. Have you ever encountered any kind of ideological prejudice like that in judging a debate?
Once in a blue moon, you will run into people like that. I guess it's kind of the idea of life. But luckily, most judges are very open-minded. So you'll get them, and they'll try to put their own personal preferences on the back burner and listen to the arguments.
Have you ever encountered any judges that let other kinds of prejudice seep in, like racial or sexual prejudice? Maybe they think a black can't debate as well as a white, or a girl can't debate as well as a boy.
Luckily, in my personal life, I have never had that. I've heard of stories from the past where that was a problem. But recently it hasn't been an issue that I know of in the formats of debate that I actually participated in.
Have you ever been a debate judge yourself?
Yes.
What do you think are the qualities necessary for a good debate judge to have?
The first one is what we just discussed, the ability to be open-minded. Because what's controversial today may be streamlined tomorrow. And so you have to be able to think outside the box and be able to let people speak and discuss, because it is a debate. So at the end of the day, it's about putting ideas on the table and looking at them for merit. And some of the ideas you may not like at front may actually have some merit to them. So as a judge, you have to be very open-minded, and you have to be fairly sympathetic, because sometimes you'll be judging new debaters who don't have a whole lot of experience. And so you've got to be there to let them learn, because they've got to learn to become better. They just can't do that overnight.
One more quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment on MTSU on the Record.
The Middle Tennessee State University Women's Studies Research Series features compelling monthly talks on gender-related topics by faculty and graduate students. The series offers a chance to learn about research in progress and to chat with faculty in an informal setting. All lectures are free and open to the public and are held on the MTSU campus.
This is Associate Professor of Journalism, Dr. Jane Marcellus.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking to Pat Ritchie on MTSU on the Record. How hard do you practice? What are your practice sessions like? How long do you let them run? And what is a typical practice session like for your debate teams?
It changes throughout the semester. At the beginning of the semester, usually two times a week, once an hour of theory and an hour of practice. And then as the semester develops, it becomes more and more practice. Just getting them different topics and just getting them used to speaking.
And in addition to your debate team coaching, are you going to be taking over some classes as well?
All right. I believe I'm teaching three sections of public speaking as well, or oral communication. And so I'll be working with students as well on speaking, which is my passion. The two kind of work hand in hand. Debate is just kind of more the advanced version of public speaking. Mm-hmm. Because in public speaking, one of the things we teach people to do is speak critically and think critically. That's why they've got persuasive speeches.
And as a debate coach and a professor who's in charge of classes, you won't be going to all that many tournaments at first, but as the program grows and grows, how will you balance your traveling with the need to be in the classroom for instruction?
Luckily, most of my classes are towards the beginning of the week, and debate travel itself is during the end of the week. It's almost always on weekends. And so it falls on me basically to keep up with the course load. So I got to stay up late and grade a little bit later than maybe the average professor. And I'm out a lot on the weekends, but it's what I love, so I don't have any problem doing it. And I think that's what you would hear from most coaches is they understand the extra hours involved. That's why they do it.
How do you feel when you're at a debate tournament? Is it like other college travel experiences that I've been on, like study abroad or being in mock trial, where there's a certain amount of downtime where people socialize and that kind of thing?
Right. Debate teams become a family. First of all, they become a family within themselves, as in the squad. MTSU's debate team more than likely will become a family with little of my input because of the time spent together as debaters. They naturally tend to bond. Because they are in the van a lot. They are at meals and the weekends together a lot. But the debate community as a whole is a family. They start making friends at other schools, and they see those friends every single weekend, and they become long-term friends. And so down the road, they've got connections, and they're networking, even though they don't even know it yet. And so once it's in the blood, it's hard to get out. And so you'll see former debaters come back as alumni, who come and speak to debaters. They donate money to debaters, and they stay fairly active in the programs, and they want to be updated on what's going on because it is a part of who they are.
So if you're interested in joining MTSU's newly constituted and revived debate team, how do folks get in touch with you to talk to you about it?
Right now, the best way would be via email, and then beginning of semester, you will see flyers on campus with practice and meeting times. We'll try to have a couple of information meetings. We'll have a booth at the student fair. And so trying to spread the word that way.
And your email address is?
P. Ritchie, R-I-C-H-E-Y, at mtsu.edu.
Do you have your own phone yet?
I do, but I don't know the number.
You will.
Yeah. I'm pulling in and unloading my truck from Mississippi, so I'm still working on it.
Professor Pat Ritchie, head of the MTSU debate team, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
MTSU on the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes. Thank you.